You are listening to a sermon by Sharon Smith, recorded on Sunday, June 30th, 2013, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I go to bed at night, and it's dark outside, and it feels dark inside. All the creative energy is gone. It just isn't there anymore. And I awake in the morning, and although it's dawn, inside nothing has changed. It's still dark. Another woman explained it like this to me. It was like looking out on a landscape that was in total desolation. Where once there'd been growth and possibilities, now there was just nothing. Just nothing but desolation. And words can't really describe it. And God, she said, God was nowhere to be found. These are descriptions of depression, of the depths, of internal chaos. And it's an experience of our body. We struggle with sleep, with appetite, with energy. It is an experience of our mind, a self-concept of worthlessness, plagued by negative thoughts. But it is also an experience of the spirit. Being in the depths, having internal chaos, is a human experience. From that place, we have existential questioning of meaning. We have an acute awareness of evil and of its consequences, of suffering. We sense that God is absent, and we feel distant from the very community that once gave us life. And apart from all of that, we don't have the energy anymore to do our spiritual practices and disciplines, to nurture ourselves, to pray, to sing, to worship, to be silent before God. And so, church, as a spiritual community, there is a very unique role for us to play as we respond to each other in our various moments of internal chaos, of being in the depths. Now, I just want to acknowledge, as Rosie did in her prayer, that for some of us here, this is a hard topic to begin to talk about. Either we've experienced it firsthand, and as I start to talk, it might trigger some memories of what that time was like. And being in the depths is never a pleasant experience. For some of us here, we may have journeyed alongside others, either as a family member, as a friend, or in a professional capacity. And so to make it safe for us here, if things become overwhelming, it's okay. If you need to slip out, if you need to look down and switch off a little bit, it's not going to affect me in any way. I know what that's like, and I want you to have the freedom to be safe with this topic. As we talk about it this morning. So where do we go as spiritual communities to reflect on experiences in the depths? Well, the scriptures, as we've read through this morning, as we've sung hymns that reflect on the scriptures, and thank you for those fantastic choices, we realize that as Christians, we have a tradition that has a wealth of wisdom for us to lean into and to draw on when those of us are around us and perhaps ourselves are in places of despair. But I particularly want to focus on the psalm that was read, Psalm 130. So why a psalm and why this psalm? Well, as I've mentioned, the psalms, like the scriptures, are gathered for us to lean into the Jewish and Christian tradition. But the Psalms in particular are a response to God, right? So much of Scripture is us reading God's word to us. But as we lean into the Psalms, we realize that it guides us in a response to God, whatever the circumstance. And so as Rosie opened up today with Psalm 150, when we're in that time of joy and thanksgiving and we're meeting together in the sanctuary, we can praise God with instruments together. And then when we find ourselves in places of despair, feeling alone, not knowing how to let others in, we can turn to Psalm 130. Or when someone we love is in despair and we don't know how to respond to them, we're afraid of saying something wrong. We feel so inadequate because everything we do doesn't seem to help. We can also turn to Psalm 130. So just what are these depths that the psalmist is speaking of? And we're going to start there as a way of entering into understanding what internal chaos is about. The depths in the Hebrew scriptures are these deep waters, a metaphorical and poetic image of chaos. If we think of the Israelites looking over this vast Mediterranean Sea, looking at the storms that were coming, and wondering about these oceans, these seas, these depths, they were so frightened by that, that those waters, those depths, began to exemplify chaos, either externally or internally. But this particular word used in Psalm 130, is also used in Psalm 69. Save me, O God, the waters have come up to my neck. I sink into the miry depths. I have no foothold. I have come into the deep waters. They fold me. They engulf me. Rescue me. It's kind of like some of us talk about feeling like we're drowning inside. We're not really drowning, but we feel overwhelmed, like something inside has welled up to a point where we can cope no more. The way I describe mental illness as an experience is this. It is an internal chaos that has become unmanageable and is externalized. An internal chaos becomes unmanageable and is externalized. And so it does not only affect an individual, but as it is externalized, it ripples into the communities around us. And so we as a community of faith begin to wonder, how can I now come alongside somebody? The best way is to find a touchstone. And what I mean by this is for us to also remember times in our lives when we felt similarly, even if it was just for a moment. Because being in despair, being in the depths, is part of what it means to be a human being. It is a myth that we always have to be happy. I don't need to tell you that. But experiencing the depths, even just for some time, it gives us a different way of seeing the world. It gives us insights that we would never have had otherwise. Søren Kierkegaard wrote most of his works in the midst of depression. And out of those works, we have existential psychology. It's the foundation of it. The Christian German reformer Martin Luther stood up for the people against the then powerful abusive church because he felt deeply. His despair gave him a heightened sense of injustice for what was going on around him. Jesus went into the depths. Psalm 22 is an expression of that. Paul went there. Jeremiah, David, Jonah. It is part of what it means to be alive. So think a moment of a time when you've been there. And yet I want to acknowledge that there are different levels of despair. There are different levels of internal chaos, or depression, or bipolar mood disorder, or schizophrenia, as it has gradually been come to know over the years. And these levels, or these grades of experience, are dependent on three things. One, how much time we spend there. Two, how much of life can I still participate in while I am experiencing this chaos? And three, what does it take for me to move beyond the chaos? What kind of resources do I need to draw on in order to move beyond? Do I need medical resources, counseling resources, healthy eating regimes, healthy exercise, a good network of community? How many of those things do I need to draw on? How much time do I need to gain health again? But no matter how long or how often we go to this place, it is a hard place to be. And it is very alone. We feel isolated. Just listen to the words that we've already read in Psalm 130. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. And like us, this psalmist in despair, in chaos, is reflecting and giving us a response when we don't feel like crying out. One of the things particularly depression does to us is it draws us inside of ourselves and we don't feel like crying out. It is a silent place. And the psalmist here teaches us to break the silence of these depths, to have the courage to cry out. Now I know that it's written in the first person, and I know that an individual read it to us this morning, but this is a psalm of ascent, right? So imagine what it was like for these Jewish people to be saying this psalm alone, first person to God, but in community, together. And so in community, we are called, we are encouraged to cry out to God. Now, if you've ever walked with somebody or walked through this yourself, this is a tremendously hard thing to do. It takes so much courage when we're feeling alone and when we have this concern, will God judge me if I cry out? And not only that, if I'm crying out in community, what will people think of me? Allow me to reflect on some personal experience for just a moment. I came to Canada married. I'd been married for 4 years in South Africa to a man who, looking back, lived with what I think was bipolar mood disorder 2. So he experienced these deep depths of depression and then every now and then would go into these phases of big dreaming and planning and wanting to conquer the world and then to put so much on his plate that he didn't know what to do and how to cope with it, and then he'd sink again into these deep moments of depression. And I can remember my now late husband getting dressed in the morning and coming to ask me if he looked depressed. And he would push the corners of his lips up into a smile in front of the mirror. And then he would say, Shaz, do I look okay? He did not want anyone to know because he was afraid of being judged. There is so much stigma around these conditions. And I think more so for men around us, when depression and mental chaos can be seen as a state of weakness, when society has taught us about masculine strength. And I believe that it is actually the opposite, that it takes more courage and more strength to admit and cry out and say what's going on internally than to keep quiet. And I think the reason why these conditions have been stigmatized is that we all fear going there. And yet those of us who walk through it are the courageous ones who know the condition and are actually putting one foot in front of the other and walking it out. But what about faith? Is acknowledging internal chaos admitting an inferior faith in God? I love how Eugene Peterson, Professor Emeritus at Regent College, defines what it means to be a Christ follower. He says, a Christian is a person who's not decided to ignore suffering or despair, but one who has decided to face it and live through it. That's his definition. Face suffering and live through it. Peterson says, despair needs to be respected by the Christian community because we have a suffering Jesus Christ. And I believe that Psalms, like Psalm 130, actually gives dignity to our despair. And so it is not something to be silenced, but it is something as a community before God that can be spoken out. Out of the depths, I cry. A courageous cry to God. Firstly, a cry to be heard. Wow, when we're in the depths, we wonder if God is listening. We wonder if he is there. One person put it like this: I was living life normally, and then suddenly all my assumptions, all my presuppositions, all my values were called into question, and it was just like they were tossed up in the air. And so speaking out to God in spite of doubt is a really courageous thing to do. And the second cry is for mercy. God does not keep a record of sins. He is a forgiving God. Well, in my grief, when I lost Alex, my late husband, to suicide, in my grief, I remember the depression that ensued and the rumination of the things that I had done wrong. It's like a tape that you cannot turn off. And so I love the fact that the psalmist is saying, God does not keep a record of wrongs. It's like the psalmist has to remind him or herself, don't worry, you're forgiven. I can cry out to God, because that tape is so difficult to switch off. And often we need our community around us to be the ones to remind us. Rosie mentioned the organization Sanctuary that I now work for. Sanctuary works closely with a group called The Living Room. Beautiful name for a group of people who live with a mood disorder, and they come together monthly to encourage each other. Founded by a woman by the name of Maria Bergen, who herself lives with bipolar mood disorder. She's written two fantastic books, one called Riding the Roller Coaster, and two called A Firm Place to Stand. It's her stories of finding God in the midst of the bipolar journey. But the reason I mention her is that she's now moved on to write emails, two general emails, to people who are in the midst of despair. And she finds that her words can break through the tapes that people have. And some of the folks that receive her emails print them off, cut them out, and stick them in their pockets. And as they're walking through their day, they sometimes need to pull it out and remind themselves, God does not keep a record of wrongs. I am forgiven. I am loved. And so spiritual community, remind each other regularly. You are accepted. You are loved. This is a safe place to be and to cry out. So what is our stance? What is our posture as a community? I love verses 5 and 6 in the psalm. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits for his word. My soul waits for the Lord. More than ones who watch wait for the morning. There is an interesting sense here that as an individual is waiting, there are those around who are watching for signs of the morning. And as caring people, sometimes we watch those in despair or in chaos, and we want to help them, right? We want to come up with the right words to say and the quick fixes. And we wish we could just conjure up the right miracle that someone could come right. But I feel like we're being led here by the person themselves. And we have to follow their lead. And they are waiting. And while they're waiting, we are watching for signs of the morning. We're watching for the sun. And the sun always rises. It's inevitable. Every day we awake, and every day the sun is there. I remember as a teenager going to Christian camps in South Africa, and the last evening we would always spend the whole night awake. We would stock up with snacks from the tuck shop, and then we would go and climb a little hill. And I'll never forget the signs of the morning. In South Africa, we'd hear the rooster crowing. We'd listen for the crickets to stop chirping. And we'd listen for the birds to start chirping. And slowly the stars would disappear. And then in the eastern part, a little sliver of light would appear. And then the sun. It never failed. It always came. And I feel like our role as a community is to be the ones who are waiting for the morning and who are noticing the incremental shifts. You're laughing again. I haven't heard you laugh for a while. We watched that whole film together. Wow, you're concentrating. Isn't that incredible? We offer visible symbols of signs of goodness coming into despair. We also offer visible signs of mercy. I can't tell you how important it was for me to receive communion. The bread and the cup, symbols of God's mercy that I could no longer feel inside. I love the presence of Christians. Just being with me, not offering me advice, but incarnating Christ to me, being willing to be with me when I didn't even want to be with myself. It spoke volumes. It spoke volumes. Going with me to the doctor when I needed medication. Going with me to a counselor so that I could debrief and tell you how horrible it was when I came back. Sharing meals together because all I could do was have toast and jam. Trusting together that the morning will come. And then as somebody goes through it, lastly, as a community, we listen. Because I believe that people meet God in the depths. In a profound way that they may not know at the time, but looking back, there are lessons and learnings that happen in the depths. I remember saying, God, no matter how low I go, your arms are lower. And I realized that looking back. In verse 7 and 8 of Psalm 130 is very interesting. It's like the person who was in the depths turns to his or her community and says, O Israel, put your hope in God, For with the Lord is chesed, love, that unfailing love that never gives up, even when I was willing to give up on myself. And then the person says, God himself will redeem Israel. When we haven't been in places of chaos and internal despair, we still have that sense that we can make things happen. But when we've gone there ourselves, we realize God himself needs to do that. It is an act of waiting. There are things that I do. But God meets me in the therapy rooms and in worship and when I exercise and around the table with friends and family. And he whispers his words of life back into me and pulls me out of the depths. And so, Christians, I think our response is to respect these cries from the depths, to wait with each other, and to listen to the wisdom that comes out of those experiences of despair. Let's be quiet for a few moments and reflect. Spirit, would you be our teacher? For these experiences leave us feeling so inadequate. As humans together, we come to you with so many questions about our frailty and our vulnerability, so many whys, so many cries for help. We take one step together as a community. Help us. Help us to know how to be you to each other. Christ incarnated to each other. Not one above, but together looking to you. Thank you for the hope of the sun. May it rise for us in the days that follow.